Harry was now so chilled that he thought longingly for a moment of the snug, dry interiors of the cars streaming along below. Then, even more longingly, of travelling by flue powder. It might be uncomfortable to spin around in fireplaces, but it was at least warm in the flames. Kingsley Shacklebolt swooped around him, bald pate, an earring gleaming slightly in the moonlight. Now Emmeline Vance was on his right, her wand out, her head turning left and right. Then she too swooped over him, to be replaced by Sturgis Podmore.
"We ought to double back for a bit, just to make sure we're not being followed," Moody shouted.
"Are you mad, Mad-Eye?"
Tonks screamed from the front.
"We're all frozen to our brooms. If we keep going off course, we're not going to get there until next week. We're nearly there now."
"Time to start the descent,"
came Lupin's voice.
"Follow Tonks, Harry."
Harry followed Tonks into a dive. They were heading for the largest collection of lights he had yet seen, a huge, sprawling, crisscrossing mass, glittering in lines and grids, interspersed with patches of deepest black. Lower and lower they flew until Harry could see individual headlights and street lamps, chimneys and television aerials. He wanted to reach the ground very much, though he felt sure that someone would have to unfreeze him from his broom.
"Here we go,"
called Tonks, and a few seconds later she had landed. Harry touched down right behind her and dismounted on a patch of unkempt grass in the middle of a small square. Tonks was already unbuckling Harry's trunk. Shivering, Harry looked around. The grimy fronts of the surrounding houses were not welcoming. Some of them had broken windows, glimmering dully in the light from the street lamps. Paint was peeling from many of the doors, and heaps of rubbish lay outside several sets of front steps.
"Where are we?"
Harry asked. But Lupin said quietly,
"In a minute."
Moody was rummaging in his cloak, his gnarled hands clumsy with cold.
"Got it,"
he muttered, raising what looked like a silver cigarette lighter into the air and clicking it. The nearest street lamp went out with a pop. He clicked the unlighter again. The next lamp went out. He kept clicking until every lamp in the square was extinguished, and the only light in the square came from curtained windows and the sickle moon overhead.
"Borrowed it from Dumbledore," growled Moody, pocketing the put-outer. "That'll take care of any muggles looking out of the window, see? Now, come on, quick."
He took Harry by the arm and led him from the patch of grass, across the road and onto the pavement. Lupin and Tonks followed, carrying Harry's trunk between them, the rest of the guard, all with their wands out, flanking them. The muffled pounding of a stereo was coming from an upper window in the nearest house. A pungent smell of rotting rubbish came from the pile of bulging bin bags just inside the broken gate.
"Here,"
Moody muttered, thrusting a piece of parchment toward Harry's disillusioned hand and holding his lit wand close to it so as to illuminate the writing.
"Read quickly and memorize."
Harry looked down at the piece of paper. The narrow handwriting was vaguely familiar. It said, "The headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix may be found at number 12 Grimald Place, London."